Our scripture lessons continue in Paul's letter to the church at Corinth. He begins this particular passage with the gift of love. Let us be attentive to God's living word this morning. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions and if I hand over my body so that I may boast but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in the wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Love never ends. But as for prophecies, they will come to an end. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will come to an end. For we only know in part, and we prophesy only in part. But when the complete comes, the partial will come to an end. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became an adult, I put an end to my childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now I only know in part, then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known. And now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. Turning over to the Gospel of Matthew, may wonder why we're so far deep into the Gospel of Matthew this morning. Let your heart be attentive. While they were eating, Jesus took a loaf of bread, and after blessing it, he broke it, gave it to his disciples, and said, "Take, eat. This is my body." Then he took a cup, and after giving thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink from it, all of you. For this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for the many of the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will never again drink of the fruit of the vine until the day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." When they had sung the hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. If you are visiting with us this morning, or maybe you've returned from your winter vacation stay in a much warmer climate, we're beginning a sermon series on discipleship this morning. This will be a four-week sermon series where we study what it means to follow Jesus. It'll help prepare our hearts and minds for Lent. Yes, I said it, Lent. It's only a month away. And we don't really prepare for Lent, usually. It just kind of sneaks up on us in the middle of the night. But this year, I thought it might be helpful if we studied what it meant to set a table for discipleship, or to set the table to journey with Jesus during Lent. And all we know, and we all know, we as Presbyterians like to eat, so this particular Sunday should be right up our alley. We could have started so many places with our discipleship journey. We could have started out by the sea, or in our homes, or in the temple, or on the mountainside with Jesus. Yet we're Presbyterians, and we eat around tables a lot, every Sunday morning if you've been at a place at the table. So it makes more sense to begin our journey here with the words of institution, the words that were spoken and shared on a night of arrest and betrayal. So, these words of institution. My grandfather always had a way with words. He could tell a story like no other. My grandfather, to me, was known as Papa. We'd gather around the table looking to hear a story as he had served in two wars in his lifetime, or a story of when he went to Africa to build them a lake, or the time he was asked to build a lake in Texas. He was full of stories that seemed as some other land. And he would not tell you a story anywhere but at a table. Could be a table at his house, could be a table out in public, but the stories only happened at a table. You could beg him to tell you a story in the living room or on the porch. Those, he said, were not story places. The porch, he said, is for looking at the beauty of this world. The living room was to live in, but not to tell a story. The table, he said, though, the table is for stories, for closeness, for eye-to-eye contact. I'll never forget those stories that Papa would tell us around that table. Some of them I can recite to you to this day by heart. We never got tired of hearing them. For instance, the one where he's serving overseas in Korea with his brother-in-law. They were ambushed on one of their missions to take food to the next town. My grandfather was a sergeant and was talking to the enemy, trying to say that all the food they had and they were carrying could be the enemy's if they wanted. Papa's brother-in-law was scared beyond measure. He was pacing and suddenly making the enemy a little nervous. So my grandfather took out his gun and shot him in the butt. Papa's brother-in-law fell to the ground. Papa turned to the enemy and continued as if nothing was happening. The enemy eventually let them go. Papa said he went over to Uncle Leonard to apologize and was tackled to the ground. Small scuffle ensued until Papa said, "You got away with your life, didn't you? Now you can go home. You've been shot. You don't have to tell them who shot you." And a smile crept across my uncle's face, and my uncle kissed my grandfather because he never wanted to join the army anyways. You see, Uncle Leonard would never tell us that story. And if he did, he never told it the same way my grandfather told it, the details. Oh, he tells of the time he was shot, but not by whom, and not the kissing part. There were many, many stories that my grandfather told us would be passed on to generations upon generations if we could just remember them. Life happened around that table when my grandfather was involved. I'll never forget the moment when he told me he wanted me to be a doctor to fix people's hearts because his was broken. I'll never forget the moment around the table when I told him that I was 2 weeks from graduating from college, the first person ever in his family to do so. I'll never forget the time when I feared sitting around that table and telling him I wasn't going to medical school, but instead felt a call to ministry. I'll never forget a moment around that table when we sat and there were no stories or words to exchange because we both knew he was dying. The only thing we shared that day were a lot of tears around that table. See, I was in college, and I went home to visit my grandparents. We sat around the table, and I told my papa one time, I said, "What if I invited some of my college friends? You never got to go to college, and I have all these friends, and it's exciting, and I tell you all these stories, but you never see them. Could I invite them for Thanksgiving?" Well, he had heard all my stories of my band friends, and I think in his mind, the 300-member-plus band was coming to Thanksgiving. With a little caution, he said, "How many do you think are coming?" Oh, I said, "You know, about 400. He said, well, we better start putting in the table extensions then. And we both laughed. How many do you think will sit around Christ's table? And how many do you think have already sat around that table for 2,000 years to be fed? 12 disciples were in the room when it began, around that table with Jesus on the night of his arrest. Some scholars tell us there were many other people in the room, but at least 13 people we know of were at that table. Those gathered around the table that night resemble our own tables. Those gathered were not perfect. None of them had a perfect faith except Jesus. No one around that table ever quite got it right either. Each had a different life, a different background, a different reputation, and definitely a different allegiance. See, Thomas was at the table. He asked only one question, and now he's been labeled for all time the one who doubts. Thomas reveals to us that the doubt and questioning are not separate from a life of faith, and Thomas is at the table. There's Judas, the betrayer, the one who will trade 3 years of discipleship for 30 pieces of silver, the deal he has already secured with the religious authorities while he is sitting around the table. He even leaves dinner early to secure that the deal is still happening. I will make you a deal, Judas, is at the table. Peter, the leader, is at the table, the disciple whom we love. His faith is something we admire. He's over-enthusiastic all the time. I have the right answer, Jesus. Pick me, pick me. And perhaps he is the closest disciple to Jesus. Peter's invited to go with him as the time draws near. Come, Peter, go with me to the Mount of Olives. Come, pray with me. Peter doesn't end up praying, but rather sleeping as Jesus prays in the Garden of Gethsemane. You'd think that would be enough to Peter's story, but after Jesus is handed over, Peter has a chance to set the record straight. He will instead deny he ever knew Jesus 3 separate times. Jesus at the table even tells Peter this much. And Peter the leader says, no, Lord, not I. I won't deny you when the going gets tough. I won't abandon you. I will follow you in good times and in bad times. And this Peter sits at the table alongside Judas and Thomas. Peter, Judas, and Thomas are all at the table with a host of others who have a similar path, a similar journey. Their faith and their doubt, their betrayal, their questions, their denials did not keep them from the table. Jesus rather chooses to be with them at the table, chooses to be with the doubter, the denier, the betrayer at the table. And not just to be with them, but to be ordinary people with ordinary food and make it something holy. Actions, not just words, will stand the test of time. And this is the very place where Jesus chooses one action that will save us for eternity. To be the host at this table, the one who sets the table and always invites all to gather. At any point in time, we could be a myriad of these disciples. We can be doubting Steve's or doubting Emma's. We can be those strong in faith enough to believe we can walk on water, or earnest enough to believe that we would never, ever deny Jesus publicly when asked. We could be denying Kevin's or denying Karen's. We can be betrayers too, actively seeking to make our own deals with other allegiances. We can be betraying John's and betraying Gina's. But Jesus will still set the table and place in our lives that only place where you know you belong. Have you ever noticed that Jesus never waited for anyone to set a table? Jesus does not wait for us to invite him to the table or even into our hearts. He says, I'll set the table first. I'll be the host. I'll set the stage for your stories to come together, a place where you can be seen and heard, a place that feels like home no matter how far you have traveled. We often say this is the table of grace, for good reason. Had Jesus waited for us to set this table, many of us would have never, ever made it here. Had we been the host of our own tables, it would not have turned out to be so grace-filled, I don't think. Because Jesus is the host of this table, our stories of faith and life have a different meaning and a different ending. And if betrayers and deniers and doubters were some of the first that sat around in the upper room around that table, and we are the ones gathered now around this table that has been set, it begs the question then, just who then would Jesus not invite to dine with him? Who then would Jesus not walk alongside or eat with or tell stories with or try to make them see differently? Who doesn't have a chair around the table with Christ? According to Christ, everyone seems to have a place here. I can hear my papa's voice, well, how many do you think are coming? Oh, papa, more than we will ever know. And more so that there's plenty of chairs, and I imagine always one extra. We may have sat around this particular table most of our lives, or we're coming for the very first time. Yet we come because we seek out our story to understand more about ourselves and about Jesus, who invites us to come and see. Have you ever noticed the paintings of the Last Supper? The front of the table is always open to your view, as if to say, there's always more seats here. Pull up a chair, as if the host was asking, well, how many do you think? Probably should leave some room. So I ask you this day, where do you tell your stories of faith? Where do your children sit with you and hear about who they came from and who they are and who God is calling them to be? Where and when do we invite those whose stories seem so lost a place to share their stories with us about who they are and where they come from? It's around this table, any table that Christ sets. Why? Because Amazing Grace tells us that the host of this table ensures that no matter where you are on your faith journey, there's always a place for you here. Your story matters at this table because Amazing Grace tells us so. Thanks be to God for that good news. Amen.